The aftermath of nonviolence is the creation of the beloved community. The aftermath of nonviolence is redemption. The aftermath of nonviolence is reconciliation. The aftermath of violence, however, is bitterness. And this is the thing I'm concerned about. Let us fight passionately and unrelentingly for the goal of justice and freedom. But let's be sure that our hands are clean in the struggle. Let us never fight with falsehood and violence and hate and malice, but always fight with love, so that when the day comes that the walls of segregation have completely crumbled in Montgomery, that we will be able to live with people as our brothers and sisters.
Good morning. I'm John Shuck, and this is The Beloved Community. The Beloved Community is heard on the second Friday of every month between 9 and 10. Resources for social justice, spirituality, and activism. I have a website that is called progressivespirit.net, so I have this monthly show on KBOO as well as a weekly podcast, and you can get all that audio at progressivespirit.net. I have on the phone with me Dr. Aisha Juman. She's from Seattle. She's the founder and the president of the Yemen Relief and Reconstruction Foundation, which is a nonprofit charity organization that aims to provide relief to the people of Yemen and support peace-building efforts. As a professional, Dr. Juman has been working as an independent consultant in health-related projects since April 2013. She manages and coordinates health-funded projects in Yemen, including the Field Epidemiology Training Program. Prior to this, Dr. Juman was a consultant for CDC, supporting these programs in the Middle East. In 2011, she helped establish the Yemen program amid much social and political unrest in collaboration with the CDC and the Ministry of Public Health and Population. Between 2008 and 2010, Dr. Juman was director of the HPV vaccine project at PATH, working in India, Peru, Vietnam, and Uganda. She is an assistant professor at both Emory University School of Public Health in the Epidemiology Department and Sana'a University in Yemen under the Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences. She was on this program a few months ago. In March, she was in Portland to talk about the situation in Yemen for the Roots of Conflict Conference, and she's now with me by phone to update that. Welcome, Dr. Juman, to the Beloved Community.
Thank you very much for inviting me. Delighted to be with you, an honor to be with you.
You have been working tirelessly to communicate to the public the situation, what is going on in Yemen, and had a little bit of a victory here this week. And I want you to spend some time talking with me about this, the Senate voting 56-41 to end U.S. support of the Saudi-led war. Can you tell me what this vote means?
This vote means a lot to the Yemeni people and also to the, everybody in this country who had been working very hard to expose atrocities that the Yemeni people have been subjected to by the Saudi and the Emiratis with U.S. support. I don't know how much the audience know about this, but Yemen had been blockaded since March 2015, limiting the import of food, medicine, and essential goods to and reducing it to about 20% of what it needs. And Yemen imports about 90% of the food and medicine and essential goods. So basically strangling the population in Yemen and creating the largest famine in modern history in 100 years. We have over 18 million people in Yemen who are food insecure today. That's almost 80% of the Yemeni population. We have about 100,000 kids who've died because of hunger. So this victory for us means quite a bit because it's forcing, one, the acknowledgement that the Saudis are committing war crimes in Yemen, whether it's the bombing, intentional bombing of civilians, and they also have intentionally bombed the infrastructure of food. So they've bombed, you know, farms, they've bombed trucks that carried food. They even bombed the storage for the World Food Program, which is the humanitarian aid that comes into Yemen. So this signals to the Saudis that the U.S. government, or at least the U.S. Senate, because the administration is still supporting the Saudis, is not going to be standing idle or supporting what they are doing to the Yemeni people. And actually, because of this, the recent meeting that was held in Sweden by the Yemeni delegates, whether the one that came from Sana'a and the one that came from Riyadh, actually for the first time agreed to halt hostilities in Hodeidah, which is the main port in Yemen that imports the humanitarian aid and brings the humanitarian aid into Yemen. Without this vote, this victory, this peace process that was successful in Sweden in 5 days would not have happened. And this only happened because a lot of people called in their senators, expressed their outrage that the U.S. is supporting such criminal activities that were subjecting the Yemeni people to famine and disease and direct strikes by jets that were fueled by the U.S. government.
Well, some have diminished this vote a little bit, saying it's symbolic, that it doesn't really have the force behind it now. But this is good news that you've had, that it has had some positive effects already. What needs to come is the House needs to vote, and it needs to be able to override a veto. Is that right?
Yes. So the House will be voting. This time, unfortunately, Paul Ryan refused to bring in the measure for a vote. I think we have had enough people in Congress to vote for this. Had we had both houses vote on it, it would have gone to President Trump for voting. But we feel at this point in time we have enough votes to even override a veto if the president had chosen to do that. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. This will expire by the end of the year, but the next year, which is January in a few more weeks, we're going to have a new Congress that is more supportive of this measure, and Paul Ryan will no longer be there to block it like he's been doing many times this year. So we are more hopeful that it comes January, then we will have a majority in the House that supports this. And we already have a majority in the Senate that does that as well. So we're all very excited. And although it's symbolic, it did send a message to the Saudis. The Saudis would not have allowed the success of the peace talks in Sweden this week if this measure did not pass. And I think we need to understand that this has already gave us a huge support in the fact that Hodeidah now, the Hodeidah port would not be destroyed, because had the Hodeidah port been destroyed and the fighting continued, because they had started the fighting in June of this year there, although it was recognized by everybody, including the Obama administration and all the international agencies and international community, that the Hodeidah was the red line. However, with the support, unfortunately, of this administration, the Saudi and the Emiratis felt emboldened to attack Hodeidah. Had the Hodeidah attack continued, the whole of Yemen would have died of famine.
You are the president and the founder, I'm speaking with Dr. Aisha Juman, of the Yemeni Relief and Reconstruction Foundation. According to the website, it says the largest ongoing humanitarian crisis in the world is in Yemen, a catastrophe of epic proportions affecting almost 22.2 million people, two-thirds of the population, more than 10 million people at risk of severe malnutrition, 14 million children, women and men are at risk of imminent starvation, 3 million Yemenis are displaced from their homes. Are those numbers on your website up to date?
No, they are actually, some of them are up to date, some of are not. So the people who are at risk of famine now had increased from the 10 million. The UN had said that we're going to have about 18 million now that are at the risk of famine. So that number specifically is not accurate. We also know that at least over a million women are anemic in Yemen. That's and 90% of pregnant women in Yemen are anemic, which is really devastating. Also, we know that many of the kids who have chronic malnutrition today are going to have development problems, because the brain needs food and nutrition for its development. So the UNICEF regional director has warned that the impact of the starvation of these kids will be felt for many years to come.
And what is the situation in terms of hospital care?
Unfortunately, the Saudis have destroyed about 50% of the health facilities in Yemen. So this is with direct airstrikes. Four of the Dr. Zuzad Borders hospitals had been also destroyed. And that's it's just an outrageous, and it is considered war crimes under international law governing wars. The only cholera center that Dr. Zuzad Borders built, they Saudi damaged it, or actually had an airstrike on it the day it was going to open, despite repeated efforts by Dr. Zuzad Borders to give them the coordinates so that they would spare it, and they still bombed it. So they, in terms of hospital care, it's very dismal, and so people work in partially damaged health facilities in Yemen today, and the biggest concern for me as a medical professional, and I was in Yemen July and August of this year and visited many health facilities and hospitals, the dire problem that they have is the lack of medicine. You get into hospitals and there is nothing in their storage. They don't have any medicine because the Saudis have blockaded in the entry of medicine into Yemen. And even when they get into Yemen, and I'll give a right example, AmeriCare has donated to Yemen Relief medicine that would be extremely helpful and needed, urgently needed for cancer centers and kidney centers. The ship arrived Aden, which is under the Saudi and the Emirati control, on October 6th. To date, which is now we're already in December, we have not been able to get into the port to get our medicine out. And the reason for that, they limit the number of trucks that can get into the port to get their product to two a day. So our driver has been queuing for over a month to enter the port to get much-needed medicine into the country. So first, they blockade it from entering the country, and if it does get into Yemen through the port of Aden that's under their control, then they deliberately delay the process of transporting that medicine from the port to the population that needs it.
Dr. Aisha Juman is my guest. We're going to continue this very important conversation about Yemen. She has just been there. She knows the facts on the ground. Dr. Aisha Juman on the phone with me from Seattle. She is her family lives in Yemen. She was just in Yemen this summer. She's talking about the situation there. Genocide. Can you, Dr. Juman, give us really a history of this conflict and how we've come to a place where we are now? And would you use that term, genocide?
There are a lot of people who are using the term genocide in the Yemen war. One of the issues is that we don't know the exact numbers of those who are killed because, again, the Saudis control a lot of the information that comes into Yemen. They're also controlling who gets into Yemen in terms of the media and even with UN reports. The UN initially was counting the number of people who were killed just by direct airstrikes. By the end of 2015, I know they were reporting over 10,000 people killed at that point in time. But then because the numbers were becoming larger, with time, those numbers stayed constant. So from the end 2015 until today, the official report of the number killed is still at 10,000 people, which is really ridiculous because we know this is not true. If you look at the number injured, for example, the Doctors Without Borders, who operate only in a very few areas in Yemen, have reported that they have treated over 56,000 people injured by the Saudis, by the war. Yet, when you look at the UN estimates of how many were injured in Yemen throughout the whole time, they will tell you about 46,000. Their estimate for the whole country is 10,000 less than the estimate of a few centers that are dealt or controlled or services are provided by Doctors Without Borders. So again, the Saudis are purposefully reducing the numbers impacted. But if you look at UNICEF numbers, for example, UNICEF says every 10 minutes a child dies of malnutrition in Yemen and of preventable diseases, infectious preventable diseases. So every 10 minutes, a child dies in Yemen. That is genocide. That's a definition of genocide. If you look at Save the Children, they are the ones who've come up and said 85,000 children have died to date. So there are a lot of numbers that are coming from organizations to indicate that we have a lot of deaths in Yemen. I know, again, from visiting a lot of the cancer centers in Yemen, people who have chronic diseases, for example, whether you need, you know, kidney services, whether you need hypertension medicine, whether you need medicine for diabetes, these people are not getting their medicine. And it's just really very challenging. When we did a study here looking at the health indicators in Yemen, Yemen had been making a lot of progress in health indicators, whether it's infant mortality, maternal mortality, respiratory disease infection, diarrheal diseases, for example. All of these were being reduced by 30% to 80% in 2014, before the Saudis' attack on Yemen. Today, the health indicators in Yemen are similar to those that were in 2005. We have returned Yemen 18 years. The progress in health that has occurred in the last 18 years is all erased today by the Saudis' attack and the Emiratis' attack on Yemen. That is the definition of genocide. When you know that we're going, there are a lot of people who are dying in their homes. We don't know about them. There are a lot of people who are dying, you know, in the streets because they are in a car or in a wedding or in a, you know, a market when the Saudis strike. They don't strike once. They do what is called a double or a triple attack. So they will do the first strike, for example, in the funeral attack where over 500 people were killed. They did the first strike, and then when the first response to save those who are still there, then they do the second and the third strikes. So this is purposeful killing. Imagine killing the first responders, people who come to save those who are still alive. And this happened multiple times in Yemen. You also, I'm sure, have heard about the school bus of children this summer, when they attacked a school bus and killed over 40 Yemeni kids. The oldest of those kids is 10 years.
And the smoking gun, the literal shell, was made in the United States, Fort Worth, Texas, I think.
Yes, that is absolutely true. The Saudis' main import in terms of weapons, it's American. When the President Trump talks about they will go and buy weapons from another country, that is nonsense, because all the military is based on U.S. weaponry. They cannot start buying from other countries because everything is based on U.S. Weapons. So they have to revamp everything and start from scratch if they're going to start using other countries. Everything they've had for the, you know, they've been buying weapons. Saudi is only second, I think it's the second country in the world in terms of military weapons purchase. It's even more than Russia and China in terms of purchases of military weapons.
So if what you're saying, I'm here. So Dr. Jim,
I'm using it in Yemen.
I just want to make sure I'm following with this then. That if the U.S. actually stopped its military support of the Saudis, this would end this killing of the Yemenis. I mean,
absolutely.
They're that connected.
Not able to do very much.
I'm speaking with Dr. Aisha Juman of Seattle. She's the president and founder of the Yemen Relief and Reconstruction Foundation. We're talking about the situation in Yemen. Now, I know, what was it, Paul Ryan, I believe, who objected to this. They're saying things like we need to keep involved there because it's really a war with Iran or something like that. Can you talk about a little bit of the politics behind this? Is Iran really involved?
You know, I will go back to President Obama. President Obama had given 3 interviews about Iran involvement in Yemen, and he said, if it exists, it's minimal. This is just a scare tactic. This is the Saudi narrative of the war in Yemen. For them to get the U.S. to be behind them, especially the senators and the congresspeople, they have to invoke Iran. Iran does not have a major role in Yemen whatsoever. And if you look at the recent article that was published in the New York Times by John Whitehead, what he said there, he said that, first of all, that Iran at one point in time had given the Houthis a donation of funds, and they returned it because they did not want anything from the Iranians, and that the Iranians' relationship with the Houthis was very rocky. So it is a smoking gun. It is a narrative that was paid for by the Saudi lobbyists and paid for also by the Saudi PR firms. The Saudis have spent $27 million just in 2017 to spread the narrative that they want about the war in Yemen and keep people, you know, not knowing the truth and not knowing what's going on. So Iran has no major role in what's going on in Yemen, and it's only being used so the American public and the American administration will be supporting their efforts. I understand from one representative that I talked to about this that every single senator and every single representative in D.C., for every person of those, the Saudis have a dedicated lobbyist to that person, a dedicated lobbyist to every congressperson in this country and to every senator, just to promote the Saudi narrative and the Saudi interest, even if that means the U.S. interests are not taken care of.
My guest is Dr. Aisha Juman. She's talking about the situation that is in Yemen. You know, Dr. Juman, I was thinking about the Houthis. The media reports, when we get them, often seems, well, this is a civil war, that we have two sides responsible. Can you speak to that?
Thank you for asking, because this is something that it's been driving me crazy. It is not a civil war. You cannot have a civil war when the leader of the war is a foreign government. It's the Saudi-UAE war on Yemen. They are the one who are carrying the airstrikes. They're the ones who are doing, paying for mercenaries from around the globe to fight this war. They have mercenaries from Sudan. They have mercenaries from South America. You know, all those people that the U.S. government trained in South America to fight drug cartels, they're all now employed by the United Arab Emirates fighting in Yemen. These governments in South America have actually protested officially to the United Arab Emirates that they are taking their best trained people, and when they are still fighting drug cartels, to fight for them in Yemen. Blackwater, which is another prince, the person who owns Blackwater, and he also established another group. They also bring a lot of mercenaries to Yemen, including from the UK, from Australia, from the US. A lot of ex-officials who are no longer have retired are also fighting and paid for by the Emiratis and by the Saudis. So how can this be a civil war when you have this many countries involved in it? There are 37 countries that are supporting the Saudis with, you know, the purchase of weapons, mainly the U.S. And so this is not a civil war, because the leader of this war, there are two countries, Saudi and the Emiratis. So thank you for asking. No, this is not a civil war and should never be referred to as a civil war. This is an aggression by two foreign powers with all the money that they have on the Yemeni people.
And this aggression, Americans should know, is being led in their name and with their tax dollars.
You know, what is sad for me as a Yemeni American, it's heartbreaking for me when I go to Yemen and what the people see, they say without the U.S. support, the Saudi cannot conduct this war. So they consider this war an American war. When the war was announced, it was not announced from Riyadh. The war was announced from Washington, D.C. Jubair, who is the foreign minister for Saudi Arabia, announced the war on Yemen. the aggression on Yemen from Washington, D.C., not from Riyadh, not from Saudi Arabia. The weapons, you know, when I was in Yemen this summer, the jets that fly over Yemen skies are the only, planes that can fly over the skies of Yemen because there is a blockade, are American-made jets and are fueled. That, you know, whether it's the cluster bombs, whether it's the guided missiles, or all of these are made in America. So what the Yemeni on the ground see, they see American-made weaponry, and they know that without the U.S. support, this war cannot, would not have been in the first place and would not have been sustained. I was sitting in my parents' house when the jets were hovering over, and everybody in my family came and asked me to go and be in a safe place because they can bomb anything. They can bomb a home. They will bomb a hospital. They will bomb, a bus station. There is no telling what they're going to bomb. There is a group in England that monitors what the Saudi bombed in Yemen. It's called the Yemen Data Project. They have reported that only 19% of the Saudi targets in Yemen are military. The rest of them are civilian targets. Imagine, in 4 years of daily bombing, only 18 to 19% are military targets, and the rest are civilian targets.
And this isn't because the bombs are not intelligent. And this isn't because the bombs are not intelligent bombs. I mean, these are smart bombs. I mean, these are a highly sophisticated weaponry that can target. And so there's no excuse by saying this is like collateral damage. Or is there?
When you only have 19% that are military targets and 80% are civilian targets. No, we know this is purposeful. There have been a lot of reports that they have purposefully targeted, the whole food industry in Yemen. Every single plant, whether it, or every single farm, whether it's for sheep, whether it's for cow, whether chicken farms, hatcheries, all of those are destroyed. Even the Pepsi Cola plant in Yemen was destroyed. Even the potato chips plants were destroyed. Every single food industry in Yemen had been destroyed.
It
is a purposeful way to starve the population.
Dr. Aisha Juman is speaking with me about the situation in Yemen, where we are hearing clearly that this is a genocide, just really a slaughter in many respects. And this is supported by the United States in terms of all of its help. And if it stopped, the United States stopped, this could very well end. We had a Senate vote earlier this week to end U.S. support of the Saudi-led war. That will require also a House vote, a strong Congress, which perhaps can come in 2019, and with veto-proof to take this over. I'm kind of wondering where the anti-war movement is in the United States. It's just died. What do you think?
You know, when you are working against, a lot of money that is, the Saudi and the Emirati money and deep pockets and lots of lobbyists and lots of PR firms. There are over 46 PR firms working for the Saudis in this country alone. And they spin the story. They have their own narrative. I mean, there are at least 10 myths about the Yemen war that every single newspaper in this country talks about as being facts. And when you have every single member of our Congress and the Senate have their own dedicated lobbyists for the Saudis and the Emiratis. So there is a lot of, people say it's the forgotten war. I don't call it the forgotten war. I call it the purposefully ignored war. And a lot of it is people don't know the facts. And there aren't a lot of people like you, John, who are willing to, expose what's going on and not be impacted and influenced by Saudi money and Emirati money. And I think one of the interesting things that I've been reading about recently with the Mueller investigation is that they're going to be starting looking at the influence of the Saudi and Emirati on this administration and how much money they've paid. And so, that is something that I would be looking forward to reading more about.
This is The Beloved Community. My name is John Shuck. My guest is Dr. Aisha Juman. We're talking about the situation in Yemen. Dr. Juman, we just have about 4 minutes left. I want to give you an opportunity to say what's most important. But before I get there, I do want to say something about Saudi's support, not only in terms of war, but in terms of ideology, the Salafists and these fundamental Islamic groups, are they can even use the word Islam. Can you talk about that impact?
You bring actually a very core point to why this war is happening in Yemen and the Saudi aggression in Yemen. So the Saudis have been spreading their brand of extremists. Islam to mostly the Muslim countries, but also around the globe. And one of the things they did was to build in the largest university in the Middle East for the Wahhabi Islam in Houthi areas, in Sada, which is the birth of Zaydi Islam, which is, you know, a very tolerant version of Islam or an interpretation of Islam. So the Saudis wanted to stamp the, you know, any other versions of Islam out of the Muslim world and reinstitute their very extreme and actually very violent version of Islam. And that started a lot of the conflict between them and the Houthis. So this is something that is very old. It's, you know, it has nothing to do with the current crisis in Yemen. And so that's part of the conflict that occurred between the Houthis and the Saudis. In 2009, there was actually, the Saudis were bombing the areas in Yemen where the Houthis are living, and the Houthis were able to defend themselves and actually were able to capture over 200 Saudis prisoners of war. And that just really gave a red eye to the Saudis that they never forgot, because they felt embarrassed and humiliated by, you know, a faction in Yemen that was able to defeat them. So, again, but the other issue that I want to also touch on is the Saudis also framing this as a sectarian war. It is not a sectarian war. And again, when you say it's a sectarian war, you dissuade people from getting involved. Currently in Yemen, the people who are fighting, whether it's on the Saudi side or on the Houthi side, they belong to both sects of Islam in Yemen. So there is, you know, you have brothers who are on each one of them on different camps. You have, you know, a father in one camp and a son in another camp. So I'm actually grateful for that in Yemen, that the Saudis, you know, repeated efforts to make Yemen fall into the sectarian violence that they have instilled in other countries like Iraq have not taken hold in Yemen. And people are resisting that, and they're not going that way. And this is actually a blessing that we are not, that Yemen has not divided based on sects, and that people are actually more divided ideologically in terms of politics, but not in terms of religion.
You know, I titled this episode "Light at the End of the Tunnel for Yemen," trying to put a hopeful face on this, perhaps with the U.S. Senate vote and possibly the Congress making some action, finally getting some media coverage, perhaps not completely accurate in the mainstream media, but at least something is happening. How much time does Yemen have? How much time do the people have? Is there light at the end of this tunnel, Dr. Juman?
Well, again, we all are hoping for that. We don't want to think of any other alternative based on the reports that came in this morning from the UN, from a lot of agencies working in Yemen. They said if this truce that had occurred between the two fighting factions, and of course the Saudis have an upper hand in this, if it doesn't hold, then we're going to see unprecedented famine in Yemen, and the whole population in Yemen will be at risk of famine. So we are still hoping and will continue to be hopeful that the conscience of the international community and those involved in this will prevail. We are very hopeful about the Congress that's coming in January, that they're going to push for this. And I think also the Los Angeles Times this morning reported there is fatigue in the international community for supporting Saudi on this. The U.S. the UN envoy to Yemen met with the Security Council this morning and briefed them on the dire situation in Yemen. And he said if the U.N. Security Council does not act and act soon, then, you know, the death and destruction of the Yemeni people will be on their conscience. I'm still hopeful. And I think the other reason I'm also hopeful is that the Yemenis, are very resilient people. And they are not going to succumb to, to feeling helpless. They're going to try to do whatever they can do to help themselves. And you know, given what Yemen has been experiencing for 4 years now, if it's probably in any other country, the whole country would have collapsed. There is a very strong community sense in Yemen, and a lot of people are helping each other, even if it's, you know, if you take a bite of food and share it with somebody else. It's families that we give them food. They also share the food we give them with other families.
Her Twitter account, Aisha Juman, you can go and find out information about that. Thank you for being with me today. This is The Beloved Community. You've been listening to The Beloved Community. The Beloved Community is heard on the second Friday at 9 a.m. on KBOO in Portland, Oregon. I'm John Shuck. You can find audio for this program and for my weekly program, Progressive Spirit, at progressivespirit.net. That's progressivespirit.net. Be well.